Perfect. My name is Donovan Brown. I am a senior program manager at Microsoft. I am responsible for DevOps, if you can imagine that. So TFS and Visual Studio Online, that entire DevOps experience is my responsibility now. So as you can see from some of the fun facts, I am extremely competitive. I'm the 12th best air hockey player in the world. I'm a decorated driver. And I bring that same competitive nature to Microsoft. I intend for VSO and TFS to be the best DevOps experience on the planet. And I'm going to need your help to do that. So follow me on Twitter. Send me your suggestions. Send me your comments. Send me what hurts. And I'm going to do my best to make sure that we solve those with our tool set. What I'm going to show you today is what we have today and what I'm going to be crafting for the rest of my career here at Microsoft. Again, I am going to make it the best experience it possibly can be. Today, we're going to take a tour of our tools. What I mean by a tour is that, yes, I am going to bring up user interfaces for you. I am going to show you some of the cool stuff inside of our products. But you're really not going to see anything what I would call in flight, right? We're actually not going to deploy anything in this session. But we are going to show you the end-to-end offering that we have from Microsoft for DevOps. If you want to see these things in flight, come back and meet me at 1:55. I'm going to have another session. And you're actually going to see an ASP.NET 5 application backed by MVC 6 deployed to a Docker container running Linux on Azure, right? And I'm going to test it with Selenium. I'm going to test it with XUnit. I'm going to do everything that I'm going to talk about in this session. I'm actually going to do it in the next session. So if you enjoy what you see here, you actually want to see it in motion, come back and see me at 1:55. Okay, what are my takeaways? Microsoft is a serious player in the DevOps space. I went and did some booth duty once at, I think it was DevOps Enterprise, and you see the normal players there, Chef and Puppet, and you saw Ansible and some other people, and then people would walk by the Microsoft booth and they're like, what are you guys doing here? I'm like, what do you mean, what are we doing here? Like, Microsoft is a serious player in this space, and I would bring them over and I'd share with them what I'm going to share with you today, is that we really need to be seriously considered, even if you're not doing .NET development, which is another thing that I'm very, very prone on. That's why the application I'm doing later is going to Docker in Linux. It doesn't matter if it's written in Java, doesn't matter if it's written in Node.js. We have value here at Microsoft for you to do a DevOps pipeline. So before we get started, I'm really curious on, I need a brave soul to tell me what is DevOps to you right now. What is DevOps? It's a mixture of development and operations, kind of on the nose. It's right there in the name. It's the dev guys and the op guys working together. How many people agree with that is what DevOps is? A few of you. So some of you have a different opinion. What is your opinion of what is DevOps? You kind of agreed with that, but someone else didn't agree with that. Anyone? Okay, end-to-end automation. I hear that one a lot as well, right? Because to break down the barrier between the two guys or the two teams, you usually need to automate the stuff that we would normally do manually, right? I've also heard things like using data from production to shape our product backlog, right? And what I would say is that all those definitions are correct, because this is the way that I define DevOps. It is the union of the people, process, and products to enable continuous delivery of value to your end users, right? That's why we want our dev and our ops to play nicer together. That's why we want to automate as much as our pipeline as we possibly can. That's why we employ the products that we use and shape the process that we need to be able to instantly take something that was cool and give it to our customers as quickly as possible. Because if we don't, our customers will, and guess where? I mean, our competitors will, and our customers will go and actually use their products instead of ours. So what we've done at Microsoft, we've made this as easy as you possibly can to be able to help you with your people, your process, and we also offer all the products necessary to do that with you. So that sentence is basically broken down into this screen here. If you do not get your people on board, no process and products in the world are going to save you. I could sell you all the products that I could, and if your people don't believe in the DevOps vision, if they don't understand what you're striving for, you're going to fail. Once the people are on board, you're going to need a process that they can follow that's going to guide them through this journey of being able to take code that used to be delivered once a year, maybe twice a year, to being deployed multiple times a day, right? How many of you guys are old enough to remember when continuous integration was bleeding edge? You remember that? What do you mean? I'm going to check in code and then a moment later it's going to build? Are you seriously? Yeah, that's what we're going to do. And no one believed we could do it. And now what is continuous integration? It's a checkbox, right? Every system on the planet can pretty much do it. I say I want it, I check a box, and boom. This thing that we thought at one point was impossible to do is now been demoted to a checkbox. At Microsoft, I hope to be able to do this with DevOps. I want DevOps to be something that we used to talk about, something that used to be hard for us to do, but now is effortless and extremely easy, and maybe one day it's just a checkbox. I need DevOps. Great, I'm gonna check this box, I'm gonna check in code, and the next thing you know, it's running somewhere in production, right? That's what I'm actually trying to get there. So that's what getting the people, the process. Team Foundation Server has tons of power to give you process, right? We allow you to do Scrum and RUP and Agile right out of the box, CMMI, and we can go back in and we can customize that further for you, and we are really good at this side, right? We have tons and tons of products. So many products that sometimes it's confusing on which product you should use to solve what, because so many of our products can solve the same problem over and over again. And I'm gonna help guide you through some of that today as well. So what are we trying to manage with these products? If you look at what we're trying to do with DevOps, it's an enormous undertaking, right? We don't wanna just copy bits from one place to another. We actually wanna help you stand up the environment in which your application is going to run. That's what I mean by provisioning your environment. And when I say provisioning environment, it's not some poor sap logging into the Azure portal, saying he wants to create a virtual machine, and then going in and configuring that virtual machine. That is manual. We wanna automate this. And we have ways of doing that using things like Azure Resource Manager, where in a text file, I can actually describe exactly the environment that I need to deploy my application. I need a SQL database, I need a web app, I need an IaaS Linux machine, and what I want you to do for me is just stand those up for me instantly. I don't wanna touch Azure, I don't wanna look at Azure, I wanna give you this file that I now store in source control so that if it changes or we need to change it, I'll be able to monitor how it changed, and when I deploy my application, actually stand up the environment necessary to host my environment, my application. Now, standing up the resources is great, but now that I have a Windows server spun up, that Windows server usually has to be configured. It has to have IIS installed, has to have the right ports on my firewall opened, it might have to have some files copied to certain locations, it might need SQL Server installed, and what we call that is configuring the environment. We have tools for that as well. Anyone in here familiar with Chef? A few of you, Puppet? Right, a few of you for that too. How about desired state configuration? Good, more hands there, right? They're all in the same category. What we do is we, again, define a text file that says, I need these certain features to be enabled on my server, and I want you to make sure that that is done, and it stays done for me. You ever have an application work on Monday, someone goes and touches your box, and the app doesn't work any longer on Tuesday because they disabled something that was supposed to be enabled, and they didn't know better because it's in someone's head how that machine is supposed to be configured? Now, we can take that information that's stored inside of your head, and we can actually put it in a text file that we can, again, version inside of version control and bring these same practices that your developers have been using for decades into the world of operations as well. So there's no longer that poor guy that we're all worried about getting hit by a bus, because if Donovan gets hurt, no one could ever stand up another machine to run our application, because he knows all the buttons that click, he knows all the configuration that exists, and only Donovan knows that, and that's a bad, bad thing. So let's take that information out of my head, put it in a form that everyone can actually read and protect it inside of source control. So should we ever need to stand up our environment again, we can instantly provision the hardware and then even configure it to be ready to host our application. Now that we have our infrastructure and it's configured properly, the next thing we want to do is actually deploy our app to it. One of the things that I love about release management, which I'll talk about today and in this afternoon I will actually show you in real action, we let you bring your own binary, right? It's BYOB. Bring your own binary and we will help you deploy it. I don't care if it's a zip file, an MSI, a DAC pack for your database, whatever the binary is that you happen to have today, you bring it to us and we have tools and processes that will deploy that application for you. Very, very simple to use. Now, very similar to an infrastructure, once an app is laid down on the hard drive, chances are information has to be configured if I'm running it in dev versus running it in QA versus running it in production. Namely, the web.config. Anyone is ASP.NET developer in here? Some ASP.NET developers? How many of you guys have been burned by a web.config before? Everyone raise your hands again. Right? Because if you have not been burned by like a web.config, you are not an ASP.NET developer. We've all gone in one of those on a server and accidentally fat-fingered something. And what do you get? Yellow screen of death. Right? Cannot read your config file. Why? Because we were trying to do something manually. Back to the automation. Automation is not DevOps, but automation is important to be able to enable DevOps, right? I want to make sure we understand that. Automation is just one key component, just like the collaboration between Dev and Ops, to get us where we want to go. We have ways to actually manage that configuration information for you so that you never have to touch a web.config again. this afternoon. Keeps talking about that other session because it's a lot of fun, and trust me, you're going to want to be there for that session. It's either going to go extremely well or extremely bad. Either way, you're going to want to see it. It's either going to be a train wreck or be awesome. But there's information that I have to change as I move from one environment to the next, and I'll show you ways that we actually handle that with our tool set today. So there's configuration for your app as well. Now the app is laid down in an environment, and it's sitting there ready for someone to test it. A lot of us are doing manual testing today. I think manual testing is very important and will exist forever. No matter how good you get at automation, I do not think you should automate your entire pipeline. There's lots of value in exploratory testing. Going out there completely unscripted and trying to break the application. Computers don't do that. Computers do exactly what you told them to do. They can confirm that it does exactly what it did last time. But we can't go in there and put numbers where letters are supposed to go, letters where numbers are supposed to go, just go off the beaten path and literally just try to break the application. So what we do is we allow you to do both. We will stand up your environment, we will deploy your application, we will configure it, and then we will go run any battery of automated tests you want us to against your environment. And then we'll pause. And we'll let you go into that same Cirrus system and run as many manual tests and exploratory tests as you like. And until you tell us it's okay, we will not move that code from that environment to any other environment. We will literally wait for your approval. And when you say, you know what, everything looks good, I'd like you to continue, we will then pick up that code and move it to the next environment in your pipeline. And we will rinse and repeat this process until we make our code all the way into production for you, right? So that's what we mean by an entire pipeline. Go from dev to QA, QA to prod, or any other length that you want. You can have staging, UAT, however many environments you currently have today, we can actually use our tools to deploy throughout those entire environments. While all this is going on, people need to be notified. There's people who are invested in the success of this project who want to know where it is throughout the pipeline. There are people who have the authority to approve if we continue with this pipeline or do we reject it. Your QA lead, for example, runs their battery of tests and says, you know what? This code does not meet our quality barrier. It's not good enough to see the light of day. He can reject this or she can reject this and the entire pipeline just stops. They can give an explanation on why and I can go back and audit that. As the dev lead realized that they're not releasing our code because we don't have high code coverage or because we have too many 7.1 bugs that are still available. And then I can go back in and try harder to the next time I push code to them, it's of quality that they can actually go off and release. But those gates are all put in place for you by the systems that we have here at Microsoft. Now, a lot of the stuff that I just mentioned is backed by what we call DevOps practices. Some people call these DevOps habits, right? These are things like continuous integration, continuous delivery. I talked to you about infrastructure as code, also configuration as code. These are all the practices that we allow you or enable you to do using our code set. Load testing, I'm actually going to run a load test as part of my release at 155. So not only do I wake up Selenium and get a web browser and start clicking through my app, in the background I have a load test running to make sure that we're actually going to be able to sustain the load that we want. And if all that passes, I then go back in and I deploy our application. So we enable all of these cool practices using the tool set that we have. And there's some links in the documentation. And this is a newer deck. Don't worry, I am going to update this deck with Ignite so that you have the latest one. But I have some links in here that you can actually use to get to some other information. So this is just a sampling of the tool sets that we have. Whatever you need done, we probably have a product that already does it for you when you're thinking about a DevOps pipeline. And I think that Microsoft is uniquely positioned as the only vendor on the planet that has everything that you need. You might go to a company that has really good agile planning tools, but they don't have a cloud for which you can run your application in. They might have infrastructure as code, but they don't have configuration as code. We have them both. Whatever you need from ideation, which is I have an idea that I would like to put somewhere so that I can track it, I can groom it, and I can work on it, we have that. We have work item tracking, we have test case management, we have bug tracking. We have version control. It doesn't matter if you're centralized or decentralized. Any Git fans in here? Yeah, everyone whose hand is down is probably over 40 like me, right? I'm not a Git fan, but I know that Git's coming. It's almost like the winter is coming. Git is here, right? And if you like it or don't like it, you better learn it, and that's what I did, because I know I'm going to be on a team eventually that's already going to be using it. So this afternoon, we'll be using Git for that reason and that reason alone. Not because I'm condoning the use of Git. However, I think the fact that we added Git to Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio was a brilliant move on Microsoft's part. Love it or hate it, it's here. And there's a lot of teams who love it, and we're going to allow you to use Git inside of Team Foundation Server and VSO. Or you can stick with the old traditional Team Foundation Server version control, which is centralized, which works great as well. What's beautiful is we don't care which one you use. We've become a new Microsoft. I think it's fascinating that the first time that I ever installed Linux was after I joined Microsoft. Who would have thunk, right? How do you mean I'm going to install Linux now that I work at Microsoft? I own a Mac. Why? Because I work at Microsoft. You didn't hear that wrong. I own a Mac because I work at Microsoft, right? And I have an Android device. I don't use it as my phone. I prefer my Windows phone. But I use it for development. I also have an iPod. Why? For development. Because Microsoft allows you to do Android development. It allows you to do iOS development. And our new build system, which I'll show you here in a minute, actually allows you to build those things natively on those environments. I can run my build agent on a Windows machine, a Mac, or a Linux machine, right? It's a new age for Microsoft here. So what are we going to talk about next here? My slides are catching up. These are the four parts that we're going to talk about today in a little bit more detail. And then I'm going to basically take you into the tools and show you what these tools look like from the Microsoft perspective. First thing you have to do is plan what you want. Ideation. I have an idea. I need to be able to store that idea. I need to be able to groom that idea. And I need to be able to track that idea to completion. And this is the fuel that drives our DevOps pipeline. Without the ideas, what are we doing here? Right? So we want to make sure that we help you from the beginning all the way to the end. And we've made a lot of improvements in what we call our Kanban board. Right? So let me show you what that is. Anyone familiar with Kanban? Oh, lots of you. Great, great, great. So this should be fun. It made a lot of nice improvements. This is VSO. This is your initial dashboard. And this is your landing page for a particular project or initiative. Right? It shows you what's important to you. You get to control what tiles show up on the left-hand side, what information we show there. Gives you some avatars of the members of your team, and a way for you to actually just get a quick overview of what it is that we're working on. But a lot of us know about Kanban, and we like it, and this is our new board. Now, our board has gotten a lot of improvements. You'll notice that there's different colors on there. I get to control, by rules and styles, when something will change color. Maybe it's old, hasn't been touched in over a day. I want that highlighted. Maybe it's blocked, and I want to make sure my attention draws to that. I can highlight that as well. Everything on this board is completely customizable. And if you need more real estate, we've realized that Kanban boards can get busy. We allow you to quickly expand this to be larger. We've also added the ability for you to have lanes. What I mean by a swim lane is that there's something that's really, really important to me. And we're doing a lot of stuff right now. And I'm fearful that it's going to get hidden in this forest of work item. Right? These are all these cards on this board. But there's something that's really important to me. So what I can do is I can add an additional lane, as I've called up here, expedite. Then I can drag items from this pool below up into this other one to draw more attention to it, right? So that these are the ones I don't want to be left behind no matter what else actually happens. I can just control however many lanes I want as well. The thing I like the most about Kanban boards are WIP limits. WIP stands for work in progress. And those are the fractions that you see above the columns here. We get to control what those fractions are so that you can determine how much work you can have in progress at a time. Why is that important? I'm a huge agilist. I love Scrum to death. I've helped lots of teams screaming and kicking into the world of agile. And once they're there, they love it, right? But one thing I notice is that if I look at just a burn down chart, which is the total number of hours we committed to and how many of those hours we're burning down day to day till the end, you can burn down tons of hours and be getting nothing done. Why? Because I'm a developer. It's a 10-hour task. I worked on it for 8 hours. Now I'm bored with it, right? So I go grab another task. That task is not done, but I burned down 8 hours. So my burn down's burning down really, really good. But when I get to the end of the sprint, everything has 1 hour left on it, and we actually have nothing done. WIP limits say you can't have another piece of candy until you finish the piece of candy that you're on, right? When you're done with that one, I'll give you another one, and that's what WIP limits allow you to do, and I just like the fact that we can customize them. Some of us are good with names, some of us are good with faces, so we give you both. And you get to configure how your bugs show up differently than how your product backlog items show up as well. And we give you this power no matter what template you actually use. So we just wanted to show you some of the new enhancements here. Another nice enhancement that I like is what we've done to our actual backlog. A backlog is just a laundry list of any and everything that you want to do in your application. Anything can be put on there, and it's your product owner's responsibility to prioritize it correctly. Just as a proof of concept, we put time travel on one of our backlogs. It was the bottom of the list. Right, it's not very important, but it kind of proved the point that we could put anything that we wanted to on there, and our product owner put it at the bottom of the list because we clearly were not going to work on time travel. I like this tool because it allows me to do some nice high-level velocity. So this is basically telling me that based on your current velocity, those lanes that you're seeing there for sprint 5 and sprint 4, it's saying historically your team is able to do about 10 story points a sprint. And based on the estimates of these items, this is where we believe you are going to be able to complete that particular work. So when your boss is coming to you and saying, guys, I really need to get some idea of when you're going to get to feature X or feature Y, we can go back in and at least give you some educated guess on, we believe, based on your historic performance, that you guys are going to be able to do that in about 2 or 3 sprints. So you can go ahead and get your boss off your back with that. If you don't use story points, and a lot of teams don't, you can actually hide this information so you can just turn off forecasting and we won't put that in your face. We allow you to easily expand and collapse these windows here and these different trees. One thing that we didn't allow you to do in the past was actually still drag and drop items. Once you expanded it, you were kind of in this tree view and you were stuck there. But now what we allow you to do is have that same flexibility regardless if it's expanded or not. You can even take items and reparent them if you want to. And then from this list here, you can quickly add new items should you need to add new items to the list. So we've tried to make it a very smooth and effortless process or method to go back in and groom and polish your backlog. So let's go ahead and get out of there. So that's what we're talking about planning. I got to capture the idea, I need to track the idea, and I can use that from our backlog, and I can do that from our Kanban board as well. We also have a task board. A task board's a little different. So if I go down here to my task board is basically at each individual task. I can actually look at the swim lanes for that particular sprint, which is a little different than looking at it from the higher level as we talked about just a moment ago. And just like we said before, all of this stuff is completely customizable as well. So let's see what we're going to talk about next here. Dev test. I'm a Visual Studio developer, and I love being a Visual Studio developer. I am moving over into the world of Java so that I can do better demos and speak more intelligently about it. Every time I do a Java demo, I go back and think, thank God I'm a .NET developer, right? Because my goodness, getting the right version of Eclipse set up with all the right plugins of Eclipse set up is just, it's a painful, painful process. But we enable that too. So if you love Java, stay there, and we can still give you a lot of value. That Kanban board that I just showed you doesn't care what technology you're using, doesn't care what platform you're targeting or what language you program in. These are ideas that you need to track and groom. When it comes to dev tests, we have a very similar methodology. I come from the sales side of Microsoft, and now that I'm in the engineering side, they've kept telling me, Donovan, you have to stop thinking Microsoft all the way through the stack. And it's a little hard for me, but I'm starting to get more comfortable with it because every part of this tool set is pluggable. If you like the work item tracking but you don't like our build, you can use our work item tracking with someone else's build system. If you like our build system but you don't like our release pipeline, you can use our build system in someone else's pipeline. If you're currently using Jenkins today but you want to use release management tomorrow, you don't have to stop using Jenkins to do it. Right? You can use Jenkins, give us those artifacts, and we will deploy those artifacts through our pipeline all the way up into Azure if you want us to. So it's a new age for Microsoft, where we actually play nice with others, unlike we used to. For those who don't understand what continuous integration is, it's the fact that a developer will go and check in code. That will be checked in or committed if you're using Git. And then a build will be triggered, tests will be executed, and we will be able to verify very quickly if this build is good or not. This is very important when you have a team that has to integrate a really big system. I've worked on systems where I was working on one team, they were working on another team, we worked for like 3 months, we came together, it took us a year to integrate. Because we were all based off of assumptions that were wrong. For 3 months, I went off of assumptions and you went off of assumptions, and then all of a sudden we came together, we almost had to rewrite the entire thing to get it to talk to each other. But had we had something like this involved, every time we misstepped, every time an assumption was wrong, we would have had a build break, and it would have made us go back in and address it then, not a year later when we were trying to get it all to talk to each other. So this is going to allow you to accelerate your delivery. It's extremely repeatable, and it stops that poor sap who says, okay, it's time for us to deploy code, and this guy has to stop what he's doing, get latest, because he is the build machine, right? Anyone have that in their organization right now? That builds come off of one individual person's machine? Right? And if he installed the latest version of a DLL that your server does not have, guess what? Compiles fine on his machine but won't run on the server. Right? So that's why continuous integration is so important. It's an isolated machine that is not part of the development environment per se because it doesn't have all the stuff that I have installed on my machine, and it makes sure that we can compile it successfully and then go ahead and use that to deploy to our production server. So let me show you what our new build system looks like. This is one of my new favorite features. And it is basically fantastic, in my opinion. How many of you guys have used our old XAML build system? Right? Any of you consultants? A couple of you guys? All that money you made customizing those XAML templates, gone. Right? Because I also was a consultant. I loved the XAML build because it was so complicated to use. I made tons and tons of money. Right? Because you had to get me to come in and help you fix it. It was, I loved it. But then they did this, right? It is literally this grab bag of all the tasks you can actually possibly imagine. Look at that. The first few items aren't even Microsoft, right? Android, we have Gulp, we have Gradle, we have Maven, we have Ant. We have so much incredible stuff there. As a matter of fact, I don't think any of the first stuff up there is even Microsoft, right? I have to scroll down to get you to something that is Microsoft, maybe the index source and publish symbols, right? But we're, again, it's a new age where we're actually allowing you to build whatever it is you want, anywhere that you want. Turning on to Sonar Cube, think that stuff's incredible. Works really, really great with Java today. Works really great with our tool set as well. And we're incorporating Visual C and C# and everything else in there as well. So, but again, this is an extendable list. I've actually written a couple of these myself. It's very, very easy to do. So that if you don't see what you want out of the box today, don't think that you can't do it. The one thing, if you don't remember anything else I say to you in the next 35 minutes, if you can do it from a command line, you can do it from our build and our release system. Okay? Does everyone follow what I'm saying? If you can show me a command line, be it a batch file, be it a PowerShell script, if you can show me the commands that I would issue, I can do it in my build system, and I can do it in our release system right now without any customization whatsoever. So all those PowerShell scripts you've already written today, that you're already executing to get jobs done, we're going to automate that execution for you so that you don't have to go inside of PowerShell and actually execute the command. You just give it to us, and we'll execute it for you. Okay? Anything that you can do. And all we've done here is we've just packaged up the most common items that you want to do and done it for you automatically. Right? But do not think because you do not see a task in here means that I cannot do it. You can definitely do it if you can show me a command line. All I have to do here is, let's say, for example, I want a new build. All I have to do is come and choose a template. And we're going to extend this template list, right? And you can extend the template list yourself so that if you want to actually have, every time I do a Maven build, I also want to do JUnit test and send the information to SonarQube, and I don't want to have to drag and drop every single time I need to do a build. You can put them in the order that you want, save it as a template, and then when you do that the next time, just say, I want to use that same template, and then all the tasks come in with all the defaults that you need to basically make you much more efficient. I love our new build system. Completely cross-platform. I'll say that one more time because, again, this is something that Microsoft historically would not do. You can run our agent on a Linux box, you can run our agent on a Mac, and you can run our agent on a Windows box, right? So wherever you need to be, we're there right there with you. iOS, Android, we have you covered. Okay? We also give you hosted agents. So you don't even have to install the agents to get started. Everyone in this room can get on their phones or get on their laptops, go to visualstudio.com, create a Visual Studio account for free. You and four of your buddies can get on there for free, work on a project, and start building it right now without installing a single thing, right? So we've really changed the way that we're doing development. We've made the entry to barrier as low as we possibly can. So our continuous integration system is fantastic, completely brand new. Sorry for all the XAML consultants. That money is all gone. I'm just glad I'm not a consultant anymore because we made it a lot easier. So this is like my bread and butter. I joined Microsoft December 2013. We acquired this software just shortly before that. So we kind of came to Microsoft together. I glued myself to the hip of this particular product called Release Management. If you know me already, chances are you saw me talking about Release Management somewhere on the planet, because that's all I've been doing since I joined Microsoft. The reason why I gravitated towards this tool is because before I joined Microsoft, for 7 years, I was a process consultant. That's a fancy way of saying I flew all over the world installing Team Foundation Server, right? But I would stick around and I'd help you get it going. I'd teach you how to do the build system. I'd customize your XAML builds and make them do some cool stuff for you. But I could never get it to do this. Truly release our software. Take it from one environment to the next. The best build could do is deploy it to one environment, right? I've built it, I've packaged it, I can X-copy it to you to one environment. But I'm not gonna wake up a week later and then promote this to QA for you. And then wake up a week later and then promote this to production for you. I'm not gonna do that. That's not what build is designed to do. Build is designed to build your software. We needed something else to release our software. And for 7 years, I left our customers feeling like I did not do everything that I should have done for them. But I did everything that I could do for them given the tool set that we had at the time. When we acquired this tool, I kind of wished for a moment that I was a consultant again. Because I could go out there and finally give the customers everything that they needed, from checking in a code to actually having it run in production. And that is what release management is about. And this is the one that, again, we're going to see this in action at 155. So how does this change? Now, there's release management, and there's also continuous deployment. Continuous deployment is what I described a moment ago, where I have my build simply deployed to one environment. And I can do that over and over and over again, but I'll never promote it anywhere else. That's called continuous deployment. And there's some places where that's enough. We only have one environment, Donovan, for better or for worse. I don't need an entire pipeline. You can do continuous deployment with our build system. And it's so much easier than having to customize, and I'll show you how we do that as well. So continuous deployment is I check in code, I need it built, and then I want it deployed to an environment. It's usually your dev environment. But then it usually goes nowhere else after that. You just constantly deploy to that dev environment so your developers can say, is everything working the way that we want it to? At this point, they would probably then merge their changes into a main branch. And that merge will trigger another build that will then start the entire pipeline. All right, so continuous deployment's a little different than continuous delivery. If we're talking about full continuous delivery, we're talking about taking a piece of software that we check in, and then we actually want to take it from every one of these different environments. I want to put it in dev, then later put it in staging, and then finally put it into production. So that's what, if you hear me talk about continuous deployment, I'm talking about the first scenario. You hear me say continuous delivery or release management, I'm talking about this scenario, right? Taking you through the entire pipeline. And this gives you all sorts of greatness, right? So mean time to recover, mean time to detection, being able to do this repeatedly, right? If you're going to come to my session at 1:55, do not be late. The first 2 minutes are extremely, extremely important. And I will describe why this is so, so important, that you have this repeatability, that I know by the time I go to the production, I've done this deployment dozens of times already. I did it dozens of times in dev. I did it dozens of times in QA. So I know for a fact it's about to work in production. There's no angst. There's no anxiety. I'm not doing something different that I haven't done before. And that's what this tool set actually gives you. So let's go and look at continuous deployment and release management. Continuous deployment, I'm still inside of our build system, is simply clicking this and then choosing a different tab. These are templates that we have out of the box that actually know how to deploy your application to different areas. So our build system is the only place that you do go to for continuous deployment. I just want to build it, and I want to deploy it to a web app out in Azure. We actually figured all that stuff out. If you choose that second item, you have to give us one bit of information, just one. Just tell us the name of the website that you want to exist. If it already exists, we will deploy there. If it doesn't exist, we will actually spin it up for you and deploy there for you, right? So it's really, really simple to start going off and doing dev tests in the cloud, because if I have an ASP.NET app that I want to have inside of a web server inside of Azure, I literally choose this, type in the name of the website, and build it. And it figures out everything else. It'll run any unit test it finds for you. It'll compile your application. It will package it correctly, and it will give it to Azure and host it inside of that web app for you. It's amazing, amazing stuff. But if you want to start doing release management, then we're actually going to start talking about guys like this. So this is my best friend. This has literally gotten me all over the world. I got to speak at TechEd Europe last year because of this product. So I'm very, very fond of it. And what we've done inside, how many of you have used the 2013 version of release management? Anyone? I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Because you're looking at this thinking, holy crap, why didn't they give me this a year ago, right? Don't worry, we're giving it to you now. I apologize for that dungeon-like user interface that we had, right? It just felt like it weighed on your shoulders. But the cool thing about it is once you got it running, it just ran, right? The concepts are right. The theory was right. The implementation, not so right. And what we realize is that this is what we need to do. We need to allow you to start using release management without installing anything, right? Just go to a web browser, and through one pane of glass, we are now allowing you to look at your work item tracking, manage your build system, configure and manage your deployment system. We even allow you to monitor your portal inside of Azure and even look at application performance monitoring through Application Insights, all through a web browser. To do this demo a year ago, I would have had to show you Visual Studio, and then I would have had to show you Microsoft Test Manager, I would have had to show you release management, and then I finally would have brought you to the web. Right? Now we give you all that information at your fingertips just through the web browser. So we're trying to make all the information you need readily available. I have three different pipelines here with different varying number of environments to which I want to deploy to. And the one that we're going to go look at is Bake Off. So from here, I get to see a lot of different information once it loads about where I am. I get to define approval processes, which I'll show you here in just a moment. If I had run tests during this, which you'll see later on this afternoon, the test results would be shown here for me as well. Actually, there are some. This will take me over to my test hub, which allows me to quickly take a look at exactly what happened during that test run, drill down into any errors that I might want to look at. So again, everything that you need right at your fingertips. So how do we actually define some of this information that we want to in our release? So if we come over here and look at our environments, I simply add as many environments as I need, and then I can define what I want to happen in each one of those environments as I go down my pipeline. So here I want to deploy a web app and I want to run some test. And then in QA, I basically just deploy my web app. I didn't actually run any tests in this particular one. I also can come in here and I can actually assign what we call approvers. Remember I said throughout this pipeline, there's people who have the authority to say you can or cannot continue moving this code forward. And we get to identify those individuals or groups here, and they will be notified at the appropriate time saying, hey, we have some code that would like to enter your environment. Do we have the permission to touch your environment? If you say yes, the tool will go off and deploy the latest version of code for you. If you say no, it'll simply say, okay, we won't touch your environment. We also had in the old product, which we will be bringing to the new product, the ability to defer a deployment. I'm a QA manager. I'm in the middle of a 2-week QA cycle, and I get an email saying, we have new code for you. Should I take it? Of course not. If I take it, it invalidates all of my test results from the previous week. And I need to get this version of the code vetted and pushed out so that we can then start the next test round of testing. What this tool will allow you to do is say, I do want that, but I don't want it now. I need it next week at 3 o'clock when I'm done with my testing. And the tool will go to sleep and happily wake up at the exact time you told it to and then continue the deployment so that I don't have to remember to come back and approve this particular approval. If it's a group, anyone in the group will have the authority to move this forward. That way you don't have the whole hit by a bus scenario. Now you have this dangling release that can't be approved because the one guy who could approve it is on vacation or he took the week off to go speak at Tech Ed New Zealand or Ignite New Zealand, right? So what you can do is you can actually put a group there and you can put multiple groups there so that someone in each group is responsible for coming in and saying, I give it a thumbs up. And when everyone says it's good, we then go back and allow this release to continue. We also have a concept of our agents. Our agents are, again, we have hosted agents for you, but one thing I want to actually show here real quick, if I can get this guy to come back up. Where are you? There we go. We actually allow you to configure variables, and we also allow you to create what we call demands. A demand on an agent is you saying there must be a particular capability on that agent for you to be able to do what I need you to do. Let's say, for example, that I want to deploy to Azure. I'm going to obviously need Azure PowerShell on the agent that's going to run my deployment for me. That's called a demand. Agents actually list all of the capabilities that they have available to them, and in our build system, we'll go back in and say, based on your demands and the pool of agents, that's the agent that can do this build for you, that's the agent that can do this release for you. We'll go ahead and queue that up there for you. If our hosted agents don't fit the bill, you can stand up your own. It's extremely simple to do. And then you can actually register all the different capabilities of that particular agent, and we actually determine a lot of them for you automatically. And then we'll be able to do those builds for you as well. So just remember the concept of demands mapped to capabilities. And if you don't see the capabilities on what we host for you, feel free to stand up your own and integrate it. You can stand up your own agent anywhere. It doesn't have to be in Azure. It could be on-prem. It could be in a VMware VM. It could be in a Hyper-V VM. It could be behind your firewall. And it could be even in your domain. So you don't have to worry about all this cross-domain communication and be getting through my firewall. Put your agent wherever you need it. Register it with us, and then we'll communicate with it and have it do our bidding for us within your organization and within your network. So if you look back at our tasks that we can actually add, I'm not sure why this guy is actually slowing down here, so let's go back here real quick. And I'm not sure why excuse me. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go and we're going to look at our task list. The task list that I showed you for build is the exact same task list that I have available for me in release. In the past, you would have to install a build controller and a build agent, and then you would have to install a release controller and a release agent. Now it's the exact same agent, right? You only ever have to install one agent, and with that agent, you can run builds, you can run releases, you can run tests, you can run everything. No more proliferation of agents and controllers that you have to manage. Just install one, and because it is the same agent, we now have the same capabilities regardless if you're doing it in your build or if you're doing it inside of your release. Another reason why I love this so much is because back in the old XAML days, all that domain-specific knowledge that I had about how to do a XAML build was useless everywhere else inside Team Foundation Server. We never reused that idea or that technology, so I learned all this, but then when I went to release or went to test, it was useless because it was just very specific. But now, what I learned in build is applicable immediately inside of our release system. So we're trying to consolidate so that you don't have to learn as many different things and still be as hyper-productive as you possibly can. So I love the fact that these are the exact same tasks. So you get to choose what you want to happen during your build and what you want to happen during your release. Again, this can go as long as you possibly want. And then you'll be able to go back in and you'll be able to track different releases through here, monitor your test cases and everything, and your pipeline can be as long as you want and have as many approvers as you want. Okay? I've got 20 minutes left, so let's make sure we get through everything. Infrastructure as code. Stop having everything inside one guy's head that knows how to stand up your environment. Take that information and store it as text, text that we can actually put inside a version control. And then what we will do is we will actually give this information to either a system or the server itself and say, go make yourself look like this or go stand up these resources for us. So infrastructure as code, you can do this with Chef. You can also do this with Azure Resource Manager. Right? So that's a new technology that we have inside of Microsoft that works with Azure, where I can define an entire population of resources and have them spun up for me automatically. If they already exist, it just confirms that they're there. If you ever shift, we call it configuration drift or configuration shift, if something were to be deleted that wasn't supposed to be deleted, you simply run it again and it'll put it back the way it was supposed to be for you, right? So it's really nice not having this be a long textual document that no one would ever read, and that only information that stores in one guy's head, and it gives you all these great benefits, right? It accelerates your delivery because, let's say for example, it's a catastrophic failure. Hard drives are dead, machines are gone, and I need to stand this entire environment up again immediately. With infrastructure as code, you can do that in moments, hours versus days or weeks. We had a really good session yesterday where we were deploying, what was it, you were trying to deploy Dynamic CRM, and it took them 5 days, I believe, manually to install a Dynamic CRM. And using desired state configuration and some of the infrastructure as code, we were able to do that in hours versus versus a week, right? So it's an amazing amount of time that you can actually save, and it gives you a lot more security as well. So I'd highly recommend going back and watching that. It was a really good session. So let me show you what we can do with infrastructure code and how easy it is to get started. Now, I should have actually had my environment up already, so forgive me while I go and fire one of them up. I started devving out of Azure. How many guys of you are MSDN subscribers? How many of you are using your Azure benefits? Good, 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 good. Okay, so if you have enough Azure benefits to spin up a DS12 machine, they're freaking awesome, right? I actually dev out of this machine now instead of actually devving on my laptop because it's actually faster than my laptop. And my laptop's no wimp. It has 32 gigs of RAM. It's a beast, but it does not compare to a D12 running in the cloud in Azure. So I also use it for just normal troubleshooting. I had a cluster merge of ours. I get to moonlight, which means I get to write software outside of normal office hours for someone else. And the application, they couldn't get it to install properly. It was a series of services. And I didn't understand why they couldn't get it to install. I'm like, oh crap, now I gotta go install this machine and go figure out what was going on. But I thought, hold on, I know what I'll do. I'll just go spin up a server in Azure. I then Camtasia'd myself installing it and then sent them the video and it was done in like 30 minutes versus having to stand up a virtual machine and then install the OS and then patch the OS and then go install my application. Half an hour, I'm done and I'm back to playing around again versus having to work. So what we do here is we're simply inside of a normal solution. I'm gonna go and add a new project type. And we actually have these tools for the cloud that allow us to create new resource groups. So when I say I want to add a new resource group, this would be the resource group that has all of the resources in it to support the application that I'm building inside of Visual Studio. So they live right side by side with each other. I don't have to lose them or go hunting around for it. And when I do this, it'll give me templates saying, okay, so what makes up your application? Is it just a web app, or does it happen to be a web app backed by SQL Server? Is it happen to be a Docker and Ubuntu server that you need to stand up so that you can host Docker containers? What is it that you're trying to do? And then when we do that, it will actually go off and build the template necessary to stand up that environment for me. And then what I could do from the project itself is I can go back in here, and I can look at these different files that it creates for me, and I can go back in and modify the PowerShell if I wanted to, or look at the template that it created for me. And this template is just JSON, right? So we're not trying to obfuscate anything. And over here, we give you a graphical user interface that allows you to go back in and look at exactly what resources that we already have configured for you. And if you want to, go back in and add additional Azure resources to this template. And it's very wizard-based, very easy for you to go ahead and modify this. You just fill in the blanks, fill in the parameters, and then you give this file to our release system or to our build system, and it will then execute it for you, standing up your environment for you in moments. Right, so I just wanted to show you how easy it is to get started with our resource manager directly inside of the tools that we give you inside of Visual Studio. So once I have this file, I check this into source control. There's a task that says go run my ARM script for me. I run it for you and upstands your environment for you. Inside of ARM, you can run desired state configuration scripts. So if you need those IaaS machines configured a specific way, you can go ahead and tell us to go ahead and run your DSC for you as well. So infrastructure as code is a hot topic inside of Microsoft. I have a couple friends of mine that are big, big fans of it. Of course, they're the ops of the dev side, right? I'm the dev side, they're the ops side. They love infrastructure as code and config as code. Makes their life easier. And I have a friend of mine who just loves that stuff. So now that we have our application thought up and we're tracking it, we're building it, we're deploying it, we also need to monitor it, right? So how many of you guys are using Google Analytics or some type of other system to monitor? How many of you are familiar with Application Insights? A few of you guys, okay. So Application Insights is more than just performance monitoring. It's diagnostic information, it's custom telemetry, it's availability. It's so much more than just tell me if my apps are running fast or not. When they crash, we'll tell you why they crash, where they crash, and even give you an IntelliTrace file that you can load that says this is the exact line of code that caused you to crash. We can tell you the availability from all of the different points of presence. Every time we stand up a new data center in Azure, I think we're up to 19, I believe it is right now, we can then test your application from any one of those 19 data centers and tell you if your application is reachable or not. You might be able to reach it from San Antonio, but you can't reach it from Tokyo for some reason. And we'll be able to tell you that and alert you to people in Tokyo can no longer reach your application. We can actually not only give you that availability and the diagnostics, but you can give us custom telemetry. As a developer, I'm constantly put on an extreme pressure to go deliver the next hot feature that this marketing guy has convinced me he knows what it is. He comes in here and says, you need to move heaven and earth, and you need to give me this feature immediately. So we put everything that was high priority back, we go and we do this feature for him, and then he feels gratified. But did we actually deliver value to our customers? We need a way to measure if anyone's even using this new feature that he claimed was the most important thing since sliced bread. With Application Insights, I can actually go into the code and put this telemetry saying they are or are not using this feature. And where were they before they used this feature? How did they find this feature? And then I deploy my application. And then a week later, when I tell them only 7 people have used that feature, I can then go try to strangle him, right? Because you had us do all this crazy stuff, you swore up and down this was the most important thing in the world, and I have actual proof that for the last month, only 7 people have even used that particular feature. Now, granted, it might not be his fault. Maybe we need to go put some more marketing behind it. Maybe we haven't made it aware. So what we can do is we can use this information, we can go put more marketing behind this idea, and then a month later go back and see what kind of return on our investment did we get for our marketing campaign? Did more people actually get to use it? So it's really powerful information. We get to use this information and drive it back into our product backlog. That product backlog and that Kanban board I showed you earlier, those are some poor guy's best guess, right? We expect the product owner to know exactly what all of our customers need and put them in perfect order right off the bat. Very, very difficult for anyone to do, especially when they can't go back in and verify that they even did a really good job with it or not. But what we're able to do now is go ahead and prioritize it the best that we can, take the top priority items, push them through this pipeline, and then actually monitor the way they're used in production and be able to use that information the next time we go back and review our product backlog to say, was that really the most important thing for us to do? Based on our actual customer uses, I don't think that it was. Let's go back and reprioritize this again and see if we get better results next time we go off to a production. Actually using the data. So when you think of DevOps, I think it starts with the idea and doesn't end until we're monitoring that idea in production. That's the entire loop that we're actually trying to give here. So I'm going to show you some of the things that we can do with Application Insights. I think we actually just finally released it for real. So you can actually start playing with it. So hypothesis-driven development. This is saying I no longer expect my product owner to understand what all of our users need. Basically, our product backlog is a list of hypotheses. And what do you have to do with that hypothesis? You have to run an experiment to verify if it's true or false. You want to either verify it or not verify it. So what we're going to do is we're going to do some testing in production. Testing in production is where I want to take a new feature, and I don't want to just blast it to everyone for fear that they might not like this new feature. So what we'll do instead is we'll only give it to like 10% of the users that use our website. And using the telemetry that we get back from Application Insights, we can determine what their acceptance of that feature is. Do they like it? Do they not like it? Are we getting smiles or frowns from that particular feature? Is it even standing up very well? Does it crash very often? And we only have to affect 10% of our users. And if it's good, we can go ahead and just roll over and allow everyone to see this new feature. If it's bad, only 10% of the people are mad at us, we quickly take it away, we give them back the old features that they had before. This is really easy to do inside of Azure. We have a concept called deployment slots for our web apps. And our deployment slots are exact mirrors of the application in which it's supposed to be backing. What's really nice is that when you want to deploy to a web app with slots, you can deploy to the staging slot in real time where no one is affected by the fact that you're copying new files. If you like what you see, you do a VIP swap. So instantly, we simply tuck the IP, we stop pointing it at one, and we start pointing it at the other, and there's zero downtime deployment of your application. Well, you don't always have to do a 100% swap of your load. You can actually say, I would like 10% to go to the staging slot now, and the other 90% to stay in that production slot until I find out that I like what I like or not. Right? So it's just really cool the way that we can actually enable that for you with the tool set we have. And this is a developer putting those markers in his code to see if that new feature that I just added is actually going to be used or not. And then finally, we want to make sure that our app will stand up if something bad were to happen. Right? Is it resilient? And inside of Azure, we give you tons of tools to allow you to do that. Right? We give you SLA-backed services. You set up your environments correctly, and we'll make sure those environments stay up even if you were to lose one of these particular nodes here. So based on these hypotheses, we're going to need to go back in, and we're going to need to monitor exactly what ended up happening. And that's what we do with Application Insights. So Application Insights, where are you? We'll be here. And then after that, we'll be able to break for some questions. So this is the Ibiza portal. Some people like it, some people don't, but that is where you go for Application Insights. And what Application Insights will allow me to do is to basically look at different amounts of information on my particular website. And this I just did last night. I just stood up a web app, and what's really nice about Application Insights is it doesn't matter if you're lucky enough to be on a greenfield application, which very few of us are lucky enough to do, or you have to go and maintain a brownfield or an existing application. To add Application Insights to your application is very, very easy. If it's greenfield, in the File New Project, there's actually a checkbox that says, I would like to add Application Insights, and then we download everything that you need and just put it in place for you. If it's brownfield and it already exists, all you have to do inside of Visual Studio is right-click on the project and say, I would like to add Application Insights to this project, and we will go download everything that you need, and we'll put it inside of your directory. Just by doing that, we will instantly, don't change any lines of your code, just add the reference, performance data, diagnostics data, lots of information on what browsers are being used to access your website, where they're accessing your website from, all this information you get without changing a single line of your code, just referencing our stuff. If you want the extra telemetry, like for example, the events down here, these events that I added were me basically writing a little bit of code saying, I would like every time something happens for you to actually send out a different event for me. And I can go back in and I can look at different availability here. I can look at performance metrics if I want to see how my servers are performing. We have different levels of websites that you can use inside of Azure based on how much money you need to spend and what load you have to sustain. And what we'll be able to do here, once this doesn't load, great. Let's try that one more time. Back and forth. It'll actually allow me to see what the performance of my particular server was, and do I need to scale it up or scale it down? Can I save some money because I'm getting really good performance? Or can I actually, do I need to scale it up because the performance that I'm getting on that particular infrastructure isn't what I need it to do? If you get exceptions and crashes, you can actually go back in and you can get that information as well. We give you usage information. This was my most fun one. I always tell this story. So I was lucky enough once to go to India, and I go into the company for the first time, and everyone is staring at me, and they're pointing at me, and now I'm really uncomfortable. I'm thinking, okay, have I done something that's culturally inapt? Am I offending people? Am I wearing the wrong things? Why is everybody pointing and whispering at me? And I wish I had this back then on donovanbrown.com. Because at that point, over 50% of the viewers of donovanbrown.com were coming from India. Everyone in that room knew who I was because they had been reading my blog, and they were saying, that's the guy's blog we've been reading, because I was doing lots and lots of stuff with what? XAML builds, right? Every blog post, if you go back in time and look at my blog posts, almost every one of them is how to customize the XAML builds, right? And they were having trouble doing it as well, and they were reading that. And it was neat because I went back years later and I looked at my App Insights on donovanbrown.com, and now I know if I'm going to go somewhere, I check there first so that if people are pointing and whispering at me, I don't feel so bad anymore, because hopefully it's because they watch me on my blog. But it's really nice to also see what browsers people are actually using. I think it was Heartbleed. Was that the bug that did the SSL3? Was that Heartbleed? Okay. So Heartbleed was where there was a SSL issue in that if you're using IE6 with, I think it was SSL 3 or 2, I forget which one it was, basically your information could be read. And what I needed to know was, how many of my customers are currently using IE6? How many people are going to be affected when I put the fix in place, which will basically disable the use of IE6 on my website at that point? 1% of the people were using IE6. The reason I knew is because Application Insights was tracking every person's browser who ever visited my site. I knew if they were using Safari, if they were using Safari on an iPhone, what version of Chrome they were using, what version of Firefox they were using, and I saw the exact 1% of people who were actually using IE6. So I went ahead and made the fix, sent out a quick little email, but knew that there would not be a huge disruption in service of my website if I went ahead and put that patch in place. The other story I like to tell is that I got this tweet once, Donovan, you should actually go and add a mobile version of your website. I'm like, okay, that sounds cool and all, but there's a lot of other stuff on my priority backlog. Let me go see, using Application Insights, what's the resolution of the device most people are accessing my website from? Very few are accessing it from a mobile device. Now, some could argue that the reason that they weren't is because it wasn't mobile friendly. So why would we use a mobile device to access your website? But if I had seen a lot of people at least trying to use my website on a phone, I probably would have been more inclined to invest time in actually making a mobile version of my website. So again, I'm able to use real information to determine what it is that I'm doing. The final plug that I'll make for Application Insights and where I find it very, very valuable. How many of you guys do load test on your web apps? Not enough. Load test is important. Okay, more people need to raise their hand next time I ask that. Go and invest, look into our load testing framework. It's fantastic. But the interesting thing about setting up a load test is that there's a lot of information you need to know to be able to set up a load test effectively. First thing you need to know is, why are you even running a load test? Every time I set up a rig for someone, I'd say, so why are we running load tests? Because my boss said I had to run load tests. That's not the right answer. What are we looking for? Is there a known bottleneck? Do you have an SLA that you're trying to support? What are we running these load tests for? So that's question number one. Second question is, what mix of browsers are we trying to support? Because if we are going to mobile, your web server might actually generate different amounts of data for that device than it would for a full-blown web server. And it's not fair to run load that isn't applicable or doesn't actually look like what real load looks like. Now, I could go rummaging through ISS logs, trying to figure out what browsers people are using, or I can just come to Application Insights. It literally told me, you need to set up your load test with 50% IE7, 50% IE11, 10% or whatever you want, whatever the numbers were, I knew the exact numbers. So when I went and configured my load test, I was able to tell it exactly what percentage of each browser I want you to pretend to be, and even what resolutions I want you to pretend to be at. It was no longer me guessing at what I think the load will look like. I was actually able to use real data to go back in and model my load test. So again, these blades can go on for forever. You can basically click on each one of these and you'll get another blade to the right, and that blade will then allow you to dig down further and further into the information. It's also really good when you have an exception or something bad happen. You can drill literally down to the line of code that actually caused the exception. Did something else bad happen? No. I saw someone raise their eyebrow like I had another error behind me, but everything seems to be okay. So Application Insights is something that I really encourage people to go back and look at. It works regardless if it's a web app or not, works regardless if it is .NET or not. Okay, so don't think that, oh, I have to be a .NET developer using ASP.NET to use Application Insights. We have JavaScript libraries, so you can put in anything that can actually host JavaScript. We allow you to actually run it on a fat client as well. So maybe you have a POS system that runs inside a restaurant, so you want to know how people are using new features. You can send that telemetry to us. We will then actually aggregate that telemetry for you here in Application Insights and allow you to go back in and read it. Sure. We have Microsoft actually has a load testing tool itself built inside of Visual Studio. It's just called load test. And we also have cloud load testing as well. Setting up a rig can be very expensive. If you only need to do a couple hundred users, you can do that off of a laptop. You need to do a couple hundred thousand users, you need what we call a rig to do that. That is a central testing server with lots and lots of minions out there that are basically going to generate this load against your server. It can be extremely expensive to set up. It's great for consultants, but it's not good for customers because you spent all this money on this hardware for which you're only going to use it once or twice a year. But what you can do instead is say, hey, Azure, you have all these idle servers out there. You go generate 100,000 users against my website, and we will go generate that load for you and bring your poor little app to its knees. So that's what it's there for, and it's great. So this is one of my favorite slides. This echoes my original statement. Microsoft is uniquely positioned as the only vendor on the planet that has everything that you need. This is a periodic table of all the different disciplines and practices of DevOps, and we are the only one that is represented in every single section. Does not matter, again, if you're using Microsoft technology or not. It does not matter if you're doing Java or you're doing ASP.NET or you're doing C#. Does not matter if you're targeting Windows, Mac, or Linux. Microsoft adds value to every project that you guys are working on, okay? And that's a fun slide. That one always gets, is always a big hit. So a couple other sessions. I have another one at 1:55, and there's another one today at 4:30. This is like a teaser slide. So if you come to my second session, that's the demo I'm doing. That tag cloud is only a sampling of the technology that we're going to be putting through its paces at 1:55 today. That slide deck, I think, has four slides before I get into the demo. We're probably going to be in the demo for at least half an hour, and then I come back out to talk about some best practices. So if you're into Windows or Docker or Linux or .NET or VSO or C# or IaaS, you name it, that demo is going to do that at 1:55. Okay, so I highly encourage you, if you guys enjoyed this one, to please come back and have some fun with me again at 1:55. It has been an honor to come here to New Zealand. This is my first trip to New Zealand. It's been very, very nice. It's funny because I just relocated to Seattle. I was like, oh, so you're used to the rain. I'm like, no, it actually hadn't rained in Seattle yet. So this was a little new of experience for me. I've only been in Seattle for 2 months. And then my buddy of mine was IMing me last night. I said, man, you got your first rain in Seattle. I was like, no, I'm in New Zealand. So I kind of missed that rain that they're having in Seattle right now. But trust me, New Zealand did its part and gave me lots of rain when I first got here. So please complete your evals, guys. I would love to come back and speak to you guys again, hopefully in the future, about what we're doing at DevOps. But I'm going to need your support. They were kind enough to take a risk on me to come and talk to you today. But if you liked it, please fill out your evals. It's been a pleasure. Thanks.